The way through the challenge is to get still and ask yourself, what is the next right move?
Can I say something? I'm the type of person, if you ask me a question and I don't know the answer, I'm going to tell you that I don't know.
Welcome to the Unconventional Founder Podcast, where we uncover the mindsets, practices, and strategies used by successful non-technical founders. Our mission for this podcast is to empower you with the information you need, help you get as far as you can. That said, let's get into it.
Vijay, thank you so much for coming on the pod. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Dave.
Vijay, so kick things off. Where did you start your career? Tell me where you started.
I'm a filmmaker by trade. Went to film school, grew up in the film industry in Los Angeles.
Amazing. And what does that look like? So did you start on the set, or how did you start?
Yeah, I grew up in a small city in upstate New York, Rochester, and no filmmakers came out of Rochester. And essentially, I just wanted to create things. I wanted to bring things to life. But I didn't think I was smart enough to learn engineering, and I wasn't good at math and all this kind of stuff. And so one day I was watching a film, and it gave like a lot of emotions out of me. And I was just like, man, I wish I could do that for other people. I wish I could create these things that created a positive influence in one way or another, right? And then I was like, this film did it for me. Maybe I can create a film and do it for other people. And I was like, I don't need math or anything like that. I can just write stuff down on a paper, film it, and then it comes to life. And so I want to be a filmmaker. And my parents are like, oh, great, what do you want to do? Like, how do you become a filmmaker? And I was like, I don't know, but I start by going to film school. And they're like, well, you just go to these universities. I was like, no, they don't have a film program. I want to go to the film program. But the problem is I wasn't a good student back then. I was like a junior in high school. I was a jock. I didn't take it seriously, right? And I didn't learn about wanting to become a filmmaker until like late junior year, going into the senior year. And so it's almost too late at that point for me. So I was like, to get into good school. All my friends were getting into great school, but my grades weren't there. So I was like, okay, I got to go to a community college to get my grades up for 2 years. So while I do that, I'm going to move to California and be close to the industry so I can do that. And so I ended up driving across country in my car with my friend. It was a 50-hour drive from New York to California. I knew nobody in the entire state That's of great. California. I found my roommates on Craigslist. I went to a community college in Santa Barbara, California, just outside of LA. And yeah, I like to tell a story that when I moved there, I knew nobody in the entire state. And then about a year and a half later, I was the student body president of that college. And everyone voted for me and all that kind of stuff. So that was like my journey. And so long story short, I went to school there for 2 years, ended up getting into a premier film school, went to film school as a producing major. And then the week of graduation, I was producing commercials for Acura, the car brand, and hiring the people that I graduated with, the kids that I graduated with. And because during film school, I was always filming stuff in the industry. I was on set in many different ways where I would be on set for 12 to 14 hours, do my homework at night after I got off a set, and then get back on. And those days, I was just doing anything. I just wanted to be on set. And so I was any kind of assistant I could be, right? And film assistants, like when you think about a film assistant, like it's really like an assistant. Like I'm fetching coffee and trying not to look at someone the wrong way. That's literally it. Yeah. So you got to learn there's so much etiquette. There's so much hierarchy. There's so much that goes into all of this. And eventually after just being a good volunteer, because that's what I was doing for a while, just a good volunteer day in and day out, they offered me a pay role. And the pay role was like $50 a day. And the rest of it was like a deferred payment. And you're going to get paid when this film sells, right? And it never sold. But that was like my first thing. I was like, all right, I'm now at $50 a day for 12 hours of work or whatever. And I was doing that all throughout film school and just sleeping on couches and doing my homework at night and trying to catch class when I could.
Amazing. We'll touch back on one thing. I just want to point out that you were not an amazing student, which I find super interesting because now you're learning all the time and you're also an educator for a lot of people. Moving forward, you did a startup. Can you tell me a bit about that? What it looked like, how'd you go about it?
Yeah, so I went on to do this filmmaking career and I was pretty good at it, a member of the Producers Guild of America and everything. And eventually I was hiring so many filmmakers a year, like 300 to 400 filmmakers a year. And whenever you do a film or a commercial or music video, like you have to quickly crew up. We call it crewing up. And it's depending on the size of the project, it could be like 10 crew members, 20, 40, 50. And sometimes it's like for a 1 or 2 day shoot. So it's like, I gotta go hire 50 people for 2 days. And then I disassemble it. And then later that month, maybe I need to do another one of those. And so you start to get like your regulars. But beyond that, like if your regulars are busy, then it's like, who do I hire? Where do I go to hire all these people? And there wasn't really a good, like, trusted marketplace to hire these filmmakers. And that's where I was like, I have all these contacts. I'm hiring all the time. Maybe I could create a marketplace, a two-sided marketplace to hire filmmakers for producers looking for film crew. And so that was the start of my first startup, the idea of it in 2017. But the problem was I didn't know how to code. I was not technical. I had no idea what I was doing.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
And so tell me, what happened? Did you raise some money? You built the product? Tell us what happened.
Yeah. So it was a bumpy journey. Again, like when I wanted to be a filmmaker, nobody in my network knew what becoming a filmmaker was. So I just had to go figure out. Now I wanted to start a tech startup and no one in my network knew how to start a tech startup, right? And so I just kept asking people. And finally, someone that I went that works with me on film sets was like, hey, that's a great idea. I have a friend in San Francisco. He's an engineer. He used to be at Microsoft. He could help you with this. He hacks together stuff nights and weekends for side project. Oh my God, a Microsoft engineer. Amazing. So I contacted him. He's like, yeah, this we could do this. We would do it in this like .NET stack, like a very traditional enterprise stack, right? Very powerful, but also very slow to build and expensive to build on. But I didn't know that at the time. I just knew that I wanted to be more powerful than WordPress. That's all I knew. I needed like full customization. I wanted to be more powerful than WordPress. So I was like, okay, how much is this going to cost me? I had some designs and just handwritten stuff. Like I want these screens, a profile page, a search page, my settings page, a sign up page. And he's like, okay, it's going to be 40 grand in about 3 to 6 months. I was like, okay, that's a lot of money. But if that's all it's going to cost, maybe I'll just scrape it together with friends and family. So I did. I scraped it together with friends and family, spent the 40 grand in about 4 months. And we had built like nothing, like a sign up page, a settings page, and maybe like half of a profile page. Like, nothing, right? He was billing at 100, 125 an hour. And because the technology he was using took so long to even set up his environments, it took 20 hours of billing just to get it staged. And so
just to get to the field, you're not even on the ground yet.
Exactly. And I didn't know any of that, right? I had no idea. So I got there, I was very demoralized. I was like, shoot, we've just spent all this money and we got really nothing. I was demoralized with that, but I love the process. I love the process of thinking of these designs, working with the designer, working with the developer, bringing this stuff to life. And then I also started to realize that, hey, I'm creating technology that people can use on a daily basis. And my films, usually people watch them like once and then they're done. It's like, you never watch a film again, right? And it's like, I do all this effort and spend all this time to make this awesome film that you might watch once and that's it, right? Whereas I could do all this and create this software where you use every day and the impact that I could deliver is a daily or when, and that was like, okay, I can make even more impact now. I can bring things to life. And that's why I got really excited and really hooked. And quite frankly, I wish at that point I would have just found no code and just dabbled my own and just got hooked on the building process itself rather than continue on the journey that I went on. Did I continue the story of the journey?
Please, I feel like you have to until we get to the next step.
Okay. First time non-technical founder, I was mid-20s, thought I knew everything. Okay. I got connected with an angel investor in Southern California. And he's, hey, this is not a bad idea. I like what you built so far. Normally for something like this, you need to raise money. And I was like, oh, okay. That's what I've heard on all the podcasts. I got to go raise money. And I was like, and they're like, what about revenue and users? They're like, and it was to my understanding that as long as we had users, revenue would follow or money would follow. The star metric to me was just users activity, right? So, okay, I don't need to worry about charging yet, making money yet, revenue. If I get users, then I can raise money around that and get more money to build the tech. And so that was my North Star, okay? And I'll come back to that in a bit. Worked with this angel and he taught me so much. He was just the best guy. Best guy. I went on the angel circuit I went on the angel circuit and I started pitching all the time. And this investor helped get me intros into local investors in Los Angeles. And it turned into a full-time job for me. It's okay, this is what we're going to do. This is what I need to do to build this. All right, I'm full-time fundraising, right? And I didn't know how long it was going to take. I didn't really know what was really going on. I just knew you needed to do this, right? And I was just in the moment. I didn't see past that. And so I ended up being successful after 6 to 9 months, I ended up raising about 230 grand. And I was living large, right? I was so excited. I was like, we can finally bring this to life. We can make this really big. And at that point is, okay, I'm going to stop doing film. I'm just going to focus on this first time, full time. I went full time on it. My engineer went full time on it. And I got into an accelerator in San Francisco, went through their accelerator program. They gave us some money too. I was learning how to be a CEO for the first time. And so we were building it and things were coming together nicely. I was good in the social media stuff, the content stuff. And so I was able to drive users organically to the site. And so we ended up getting about 5,000 users on the site within the first year, right? But the problem was, is they were all film crew. And so that was good. That was my supply side. But as a young CEO, I didn't understand marketplaces and how to build them and the chicken and egg problem and who really drives the value. And so I started with the supply side, which is good, but I had no real interest, strategy, or intent to really go after the demand side, the employer, the producer, the production company. And so eventually I built it up to 5,000, but there was no one to hire them. And so they had these beautiful profiles, but no one was hiring them. And long story short, we ended up running out of the whole $200,000 before we could integrate any kind of revenue generation. And we never integrated any kind of revenue generation because we never had enough people on the other side to actually make it worth hiring these folks. And it was just too expensive to build. And so we ended up running out of money with that. It was about 2.5 years it took to spend all of it and build it all and finally come to a realization. And so then I was left with this decision of, what do I do? I can't afford to pay my developer anymore. He costs so much money. He was a great dev. He deserved everything. But so either I shut this down and go to my investors and say, I failed, or I learn how to build myself. And I was very stubborn, still am, didn't want to admit failure. And so I was like, I don't think I'm smart enough to learn how to code, but let me just look into what's out there. And so I was looking for a solution, something that could be full stack. I can learn one thing instead of my 9 different languages that we're building on, because I knew I didn't have time to learn that. I needed one thing and I needed to be powerful and fully customizable. And I stumbled upon Bubble in a Facebook advertisement, right? And they were like, hey, build Airbnb with Bubble. And I was like, okay, maybe that's strong and powerful because you could build it with this, right? And then I heard the word visual builder, like builder, right? And so I'm a very visual learner. I was like, okay, maybe I'll understand that better, right? And so I read through a couple of the tutorials and I was like, okay, this logic seems okay. And now that I've had 2 years of product building experience, working with developers, I understood the general gist of it too. Okay, this is starting to make sense. And so I went on Udemy and they were running one of those sales like they always do, $11.99 for a course. And I found Gregory John's course. And I was like, for $11.99, I can't lose. I'm going to buy it. So I bought the course and I took the first lesson and I was like, okay, I think I could do this. I took another lesson. And then it got to the lesson where the Google sign up with auth, right? I never wanted to set aside a couple $1,000 to integrate that social auth. It would have taken 10 hours of traditional, right? But now with a one click action, you could just do it right away in Bubble. That just blew my mind of like, all of a sudden I saw for 2 years, 3 years, how slow we were building. And now me learning for the first time, building at these speeds and also what you could do with one click compared to 10 hours was just like, wow, like this has huge potential.
KJ, when you decided to shut down your company, how did you feel at that moment? And what were the two key reflections that you had?
I didn't shut it down yet. I started to learn Bubble so I could avoid shutting it down. So I kept it running, even though I had no money and I was learning Bubble so I could continue to build it. And so I was building and I finally, after 6 months of learning and really being addicted to the process, I had built a project management suite for that company, right? Utilizing the 5,000 built-in customer, all that kind of stuff. It was on a different domain. It was a little bit different, but it's okay here. That's the hiring platform. Now here's your project management suite. And that app was called Jump Studios. And that was like my first real Bubble app. And within 6 months of that, I had started generating revenue for the first time, like paying users, right? And so now I had this.
How'd that feel?
Yeah, I had previously spent $220,000 and never earned a dollar. And then I spent $11.99 to buy this course in 6 months of my time. And now I have money coming in each month to me on a recurring basis of revenue. And I was blown away. And I was just like, what the heck? And then I could also manage my own business. Whereas before I get a customer service and they'd be like, can I change my email? And we had this huge log of requests that I'd have to send to my engineer. These users want to change their email. And it would take billables and all this kind of stuff. And now I'm able to just get in there and just do it and get back to building the business. And I was completely hooked. And so about 6 months after that, I ended up selling that company Jump Studios, and then informed everyone that I was shutting down the hiring marketplace side of it. And so it made it a little bit easier because I was able to say, hey, it's not a complete failure. I was able to find a little bit of success out of it. I sold it for a little bit of money to pay off some of the debt. Unfortunately, not the investors back. But at that point, I feel like I've done everything I possibly could. I taught myself how to build and program, and there was nothing left that I could do essentially. And so it was still, and I still feel like failure from that. And I wish I could have learned a similar to what I've learned in an easier way, but it is what it is. And it brought me, this journey brought me to where I am today, which I'm so thankful for. I just wish that other people's money wasn't involved and it was just my own. And so, yeah, raising money now, I don't want to go back to that. Building a marketplace now, I don't want to go back to that. I'm still a little scarred from that, but man, I love building it with no code and Bubble.
Love that. I've been through a similar experience, which listeners can hear on another podcast episode, but I think sometimes you have to get burnt, you know, to really understand what it means. And I think it's very hard for people to understand what no code truly is without having gone through an experience like that. So thanks for sharing it.
Yeah, I unfortunately do agree that sometimes getting burned is just the way you learn, right? And so it is what it is. And I am grateful for it. I would have done it another way, but I wouldn't have taken it back, you know?
For sure. Hopefully our listeners can learn to get burnt vicariously through JJ and me.
There we go.
And choose Bubble or another no-code tool.
The thing is, like, with no-code, the burn is so much less, right? You don't have to spend 2.5-3 years and $200,000 and $300,000 to do that. You could spend a week or two and $30 to now go validate this idea, build this MVP, get to market and to test it, right? And depending on your stack and your tools, whatever, that could vary, but it's not to the level of what I did. And so you can still learn those lessons, but at a much quicker rate, which, you know, we say fail quick. And that's a good thing because you're not wasting 3 years of your life to fail. You may be wasting 3 weeks. You learn and then you move on and you improve. You can get better faster.
100%. And I think what's really interesting about your story is that you, I hope that I got this right, but academically, you were not the best student. And now you found this thing and you're just learning and growing. I think that's really interesting. And I think will resonate with a lot of people that here's someone on paper, probably academically, and I say this because I'm the same. Mm-hmm. School was not my strong suit.
Yeah.
When you find something that you like and you connect it to something that you want to achieve, it's just really interesting. And I guess what advice would you have to founders listening who are non-technical and have no idea how to start this and they've never done it about learning a tool like Bubble or Flutterflow or any of the no-code tools? What advice would you have for that person?
Yeah, it sounds intimidating, but it's not as scary as it actually is, especially these tools. They do a good job at making it easier. And so I think the first step is your hardest step. And so what I would say is just put aside a couple of hours a week and just take a couple of good courses, step-by-step courses, and just tell yourself that no matter if I learn this or I don't like it or whatever, I'm just going to finish it, right? And just finish that course. And then at the end of that course, you finish it, you'll have satisfaction because you completed a goal, a short-term goal. So that will give you empowerment. You have learned potentially new skills, and then you can make your decision if it's right for you or not. But if you just go an hour or two into a course and then you say, oh, that's not it, you're not actually really giving it a chance and you're not really figuring it out. And so I always recommend you can do it. Anybody can do it these days. I teach people all walks of life. You can do it. It's just a matter of your mindset of thinking you can, you're not. So you can do it. You do need to spend some time working on it because it is a skill. And so you need to set aside several hours a week at least to do this and give yourself these little goals. Even just the setting aside 2 hours to watch these videos, that's a goal that you completed. Boom, you are now moving forward, right? So don't say, oh, I got to build this whole thing in 6 months. And if it does, everything's going to work. Like, just say, this week, I'm going to learn for 4 hours. And even if I don't fully understand what I did it, I learned, I checked in, I'm good, right? So give yourself those small goals. And I think sooner rather than later, you'll figure out if it's something for you or not. And I think more cases than not, you'll figure out how cool it really is and the freedom that it gives you.
Love that. I think that is such a great word, freedom.
Yeah.
And empowerment, because you have this idea, like, let's just say you have deep domain expertise. You have this idea, you go out and try it and you can fail and you can. And I think that's what most entrepreneurs want. They just want to be able to do it.
You know?
Like, does win or lose, it doesn't really matter. It's just about playing the game and getting those reps in.
Yeah, totally. That was actually a frustration that I had as a filmmaker, where as a filmmaker, you had to write a script and then you had to get a camera crew and actors and locations, and all that stuff took a lot of money, time and resource, and you relied on a lot of other people, right? And so even as a filmmaker, I found it challenging to bring my ideas to life, to create, because there were so many limitations with that, right? But as a no-code creator and entrepreneur, it's like, I could be sitting on the couch and I can have an idea. And if I want to do that idea, I can go and start building it right away. And like by the end of the week and have it built. And so that's you can't beat that freedom. You can't beat that like empowerment. Like that satisfaction is just the thing that has really driven me to the heights that I've gone. Because you get this after being a non-technical founder for 2 or 3 years and relying on everyone else for all this stuff, and you could finally do it all yourself, and money is not the biggest obstacle anymore. It's just time. Then it's just, oh man, you hit this next level gear that you just take off.
It almost feels like you shouldn't be doing it. You know what I mean? You're like, I shouldn't be doing this right now. I shouldn't be doing this. Like, how did this happen?
Yeah, there's a reason why no-code makers have so many businesses, right? And it's because it's easy. It's not easy, but it gives us the ability to create businesses and things so much quicker. And we love creating and we love building this stuff and we love that satisfaction. So we just go and do it. And that's the thing, is we shouldn't be doing it. If you enjoyed it, go for it. But yeah, at some point, we also need to understand, like, we built a full business and like you just launched a full business. What are you going to do with this business?
100%. JJ, what's your personal mission statement? Like, in 20 years, you know, look back, what are the things that you want to achieve and I guess provide?
Yeah, that's a deep question. I think the most rudimentary thing is just to be kind and to be known as someone that was just kind. Like, I don't want to be the one ever bringing anyone else down. I don't want to be that person, right? And so at the end of the day, I just always try to be kind in every single interaction I have. I am never better than the other person, right? So whether they're my waiter, my hairdresser, whatever, they are a human too. They deserve the utmost respect. And I just try to be kind to everyone as possible. So that's my thing and that drives me, is how can I be kind? And then my next thing is, how can I create value? I'm a very goal-oriented person. And I think I'm still learning how to understand when enough is enough. I'm very grateful for all that I have, and I have a lot, and a very lucky man. So now I'm just really trying to make sure that I'm never saying, okay, I hit this, now let's go here. And then I hit that. And I'm trying to now teach myself enough is enough, so I can continue just to stay in the moment and have my central values rather than always chasing the next thing.
Love that. JJ, where can our listeners find you? Where are the best places to follow you?
Yeah. So if you search No Code on LinkedIn or Twitter or Facebook or YouTube, you'll probably find me. I'm at JJ Engler on everything, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, TikTok. So what I do now is I educate. And so I educate at No Code, but really bubble at the highest levels and from beginner to intermediate to professional. And then I have my own agency and we build MVPs and internal automations and tools for clients. And then I also have another company called No Code Alliance. And that company is like a professional organization for no code developers. And the mission for that company is just to help this industry grow, mature, take the next step into an enterprise, understanding that my career is no code. And so my career ceiling is as big as no code's. And I want this org to help push the ceiling of no code for us all to benefit from. And a lot of what that org does is just bring transparency to, like, how much should you pay your developer, your no-code developer? What skills should they have in the employer side? How to find them? And then on the developer side, education to get their skills, certification to certify their skills, salary to learn how to price their skills. We just launched the No-Code Awards to bring a recognition to the best makers, agencies, tools in the area. That's a lot of what I'm doing is I'm building, I'm teaching through various different entities. And then I also have a podcast called This Week in No Code, where weekly we talk about all things no code, no AI, and then we do deep dives on tools, platforms, entrepreneurs.
Love it. Definitely recommend following JJ, especially when he's doing a smoking as well. It's up the occasional barbecue photo on Twitter.
Yeah. I'll go out of barbecue.
Love it. Thanks so much, JJ. I think a lot of people are going to get a lot of value out of hearing your stories. I really appreciate you. Thanks, JJ.
Appreciate you. Anytime, man.
Thanks, man. Hey there. Before you take off, I'd like to ask you a small favor. If you're enjoying this podcast, I would love it if you could, one, hit that subscribe button, two, rate and review the podcast, and three, share it with someone who you think could get a lot of value from. Thank you so much again for listening, and have a great day.